every day everybody's learning. Day-to-day business, we have to do our work, we have to think of profit, we have to think about how do we grow up a business. But then when we bring in this diversity and inclusion perspective, then it kind of becomes very uncomfortable for a lot of them, right? So then we kind of tell them, if this topic or this conversation is going to make you uncomfortable, then I think we are in the right direction.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Queer and Woo. Thank you so much for joining us. Today's guest is none other than Mr. Gay India himself, Suresh Ramdas, an amazing and beautiful soul that is doing great work, especially around diversity and inclusion within the corporate space. Suresh also has some great organizations that he's deeply involved with, and I'm really excited for him to share his story with us all. So let's get into it. Suresh Ramdas works as an LGBTQ advocate for inclusion in the corporate space, and he is also the winner of Mr. Gay India 2019. Congrats on that, by the way, that's super exciting. And Suresh has 15 years of experience in customer support and in the space of diversity and inclusion. And he is also the co-founder of Working with Pride, the WWP group. After completing the LGBTQ Executive Leadership Program from Stanford University and being a certified diversity professional and also a certified and fellow NLP practitioner, yay, he co-facilitated a leadership program called Leading with Pride, LWP, for the LGBTQ plus community and is helping build leaders for tomorrow. He is also featured as 2019's Outstanding 50 LGBT plus Future Leaders by Out Magazine. Super excited to have you on, Suresh. Thank you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for inviting me. And it's a pleasure to be on this.
So let's dive right in. And you know, I know what you do professionally, but I want to kind of take a detour from that. And let's talk about how gender and sexuality and topics that are very common in the queer community are kind of viewed in the culture that you grew up in. Can you tell us a bit about that?
All right. So India, I would say, is vast, big, diverse, and it's got way too many cultures. But somehow we have coexisted, we are surviving, and we are thriving. In all this whole process, I think gender, sexuality was very much prominent. I would always say that. Before the Britishers came in. Mm-hmm. Before the Britishers came in, I think our gender was there. Yes, though we had some issues around, you know, women, the patriarchy system, I think that was there everywhere. But I think acceptance of people for who they are was very much, there in India. Be it even with our sexual orientation as well. You know, I always start off with this. I come from a land of Kama Sutra who invented and told people how to have great sex.
Yes.
You know, with that, I think it really talks a lot about India, right? Be it with, our culture, our history, the way we used to, you know, interact with people. It was a lot inclusive. And if you look at it from a mythology perspective also, with Hinduism being the majority that is being followed, we were very inclusive. You know, we did have gods who were transitioning from one sex to the other. We were cross-dressing or doing drag. Our gods were dragging up in various forms and, you know, entertaining, and transgender people in other aspects were also being accepted in our mythology. Even if you go to this temple called the Khajuraho temple, it talks about the different forms of sex that you can have, be it with men, women, between two women, between two men, between with many people. You know, so we had all of this being very inclusive in India. But after Britishers coming in, they really messed it up for us, you know, in every aspect, be it with who we are as Indians, be it, you know, with the culture that we have, with the habits that we had, everything was looked down upon. To the fact that we were even told that the skin color is not good if you're dark. If you're fair, you're considered to be much better.
Right.
That is something that, yeah, which is currently happening everywhere in the US as well. I think, you know, even skin color was a big issue, but, you know, India was predominantly brown skinned people. But after them coming in, it kind of just took a whole swing off. And, you know, the whole concept of color or fairness is something very much there. We are a $50 million or billion-dollar market for fairness creams alone. Wow. So you can imagine the kind of thought process or the mindset that we have around dark-skinned people. You know, I mean, I was one of them. When I was a kid, I was not comfortable about my skin color because everybody else around me, outside my family circle, bought it out and said that you are dark and, you know, you're not good. So I used to apply some of those fairness creams when I was a young boy until my college days where I was like, you know, can you make me fair? I just want to be fair, you know. But yeah, I mean, with all of that as well, I think ever since after Britishers left also, they didn't take whatever garbage they had put in here. Yep. They just left it out here for us to deal with it. And we are still dealing with it. You know, if you have to talk about gender, yes, women are still looked down, which is becoming a lot more of an issue. Sexuality, we don't talk about sex anymore. We just confine it within the four walls between two adults. The kids don't get to know anything about it. They have to learn, but they don't learn the right way because the information available in the internet is in the form of pornography or porn, which is not the right way of education, but they learn that. And yeah, I mean, even with regarding to gender identity, it is still a learning process, but we are a lot ahead, I would say, compared to a lot of the countries in the world. We have a lot, because we have a history, because our culture really backs up and talks about it in a lot of various scriptures. So in that ways, we bring that, you know, in the forward and we start talking about it.
I was just about to ask you, because when you're talking, and I am familiar with some pieces of Hinduism, and like you said, the Karma Sutra, these things have been around for so long, yet with the British influence, like, how are you going about speaking to Indians now? I recall that interview that I mentioned when I got in touch with you initially, and I can't remember the news group that it was with, but are you able to kind of bring out those traditional cultural pieces and say, like, hey guys, this was something that we were talking about that was accepted, that was part of our culture for thousands of years? Do you connect it in that way for them, or are they not willing to look at that and you just have to come at it from a, you know, 21st century perspective? How are you able to have that conversation with them now?
For me, yes, I'm so glad that we had that kind of history. We had that kind of culture where we can really, you know, bring that forward. So there is a lot of these contexts, because a lot of them right now in the current generation or the current world, they're saying that, oh, this is not a part of our culture. This is something new that has kind of come up. And we have to go back and say, you know what, hold on. It is not something that has been new. It has very much been right from the time that humans evolved, and we are very much there. And we have to call it out and tell them, you know, across the world also, if you go back to our tribes, you know, the tribal population which were evolving, be it in Australia, be it in India, be it even the US and, you know, South America, all the initial tribal cultural people, you know, did talk about it in some form or the other, the existence of gender fluidity, sexuality, sexual orientation in every aspect they were possible. Maybe in some places, yes, they did discriminate, but then I think the conversation or their existence was never removed.
Right.
right? So I think that I always do bring about. And from an Indian culture perspective, I always go back and tell them, you know, we were a land of accepting people. And if you don't want to, I always take a one-way ticket to the Khajuraho temple, which talks about all of this.
Yes, yes.
It has all the sculptures, all the, you know, different forms of, you know, sex and sexual positions. Go there and you can figure out. If you still say no, it's not part of a culture, then you're just fooling yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And I want to, you know, take this conversation and make it personal for a moment here. Mm-hmm. When did you, and I kind of really dislike when people are like, so when did you realize that you were different? Because I'm like, for me personally, I never realized that I was different. I just realized everybody was not like me.
Yeah.
For me, I've always been attracted to women. It never occurred to me that I wasn't quote unquote straight. I was just like, well, I've always liked girls. So for me in my head, I'm like, this is all I know.
Right.
But when, and you know, and of course that's interesting where, you know, later on sitting in the pew at a Baptist church, I'm being told all of the things that Christianity sometimes tends to feed young people. When you were coming up as a teenager, a queer teenager, what were some of the challenges and, you know, tweaks that you felt you had to make in the way that you went about the world in the culture you grew up in to kind of stay safe, stay accepted, stay, like, how did you go about the world at that point?
I think, you know, to kind of go back, I think, you know, from a very young age, I knew I was different in the sense, you know, I knew I was special because I was not like the other people. You know, for some reason, there was this thing that I'm special because of ABC reasons. And those reasons were because of my mannerisms. I was very feminine in my behavior with my, you know, gesturing. I was always very feminine, and I was always bullied by people, you know, from a young age. Bullying was something that was part and parcel of my life until my college, till I started working. I think I really went through that whole process. but I knew that because I was special, maybe I was being bullied, you know. There was this other context around that, which I'm, you know, beginning to understand that, yeah, maybe as I was growing up, you know, only special people or, you know, God's favorite child go through a lot of, you know, hurdles in life because they are meant to go through that.
Right.
You know, the regular people, if you're not a God's favorite child, yes, you have your life probably easy, but a God's favorite child always goes through that. You know, I don't know, for some reason, I guess I try to put this in the context of even Christianity, like, you know, Jesus Christ was God's favorite child and he had to go through all of this, you know, yes, to kind of take the burden off from the regular people who were committing sins. I mean, I was just trying to think of it in that way because I grew up in, you know, Catholic, you know, in a Christian school. So, you know, talking about Jesus and, you know, the whole verses and the, you know, songs and all of that kind of got me thinking, maybe I'm the God's favorite child and that's why I have to go all through this. But I think there was a limit to it. And I think at, you know, a couple of points, it did go off. And, you know, for me, honestly speaking, I did try to kill myself because I had enough of that bullying at a very young age. It didn't happen, but somehow I kind of, something within me told, you know, Suresh, this is not for you. You're not supposed to do it. Don't go for it. And something very strong came in me and said, all right, enough is enough. Don't go with it. And I made a promise to myself then that no matter what happens in my life, whatever my life is going to be, I'm never or ever going to think of taking this step ever again. Mm. You know, so that kind of formed or seated the, you know, where my life is really going to take me forward with. And knowing that I was special, knowing that I was different, knowing that I am not going to probably fit into the society that I was in, because anywhere I went, I was being looked down, or I was always being noticed by people for my aspects, be it my mannerisms or my color, and all of that was always brought in. I said, okay, I'm going to survive this and I'm going to go forward with this no matter what happens. And during those days also, I realized this, that my attraction was not as regular as how it was, like how others spoke. The guys used to talk with the girls used to talk with guys, and they were like, oh, this is so sweet. Oh, I'm feeling nice and I'm feeling good. But I never had that, because I was having that attraction, or that, you know, that kind of feeling for the same sex. And so this was happening with some of my school friends or some of my seniors in school. And I was like, what is this? And I couldn't speak to anybody because nobody spoke about this. You know, not there was not one other person talking about this. And I was like, what is this? You know, why am I only feeling like this? And I was, another reason for me to not talk about it also, because of the bullying. So because all of them were there, I never really wanted to interact with anybody. And I said, you know what, I'm going to keep this within myself, because if I say this, maybe they'll get another opportunity to pounce on me again. Mm-hmm. So I completely disowned myself from having those conversations. I got to know about myself was only when I was in college, because that time I got the opportunity to have access to internet, because before that there was no internet access. And only when I had internet access was I got to know, oh, yes, there are people around the world like me. And the word gay, homosexual, I got to know that only through internet. And, you know, one of those days after getting and researching and all of that, I kind of said that to myself, you know, Suresh, I think you're gay. You know, this is who you are. And this is who you are. And I think that was an aha moment for me. You know, just by me telling that to myself, that I am gay and I like guys, I think, you know, was some sort of, you know, making myself believe, or not believe, but, you know, confirming who I am, you know, accepting who I am, and, you know, saying that, yes, this is who I am, let's go with it. Until then, I was always very confused. I was always like, you know, what is happening with me? Why am I like this? I used to have arguments with God, and, you know, I used to, you know, have those fights like, you know, why do you make me like this? And, you know, why am I like that? But I think that day kind of really reaffirmed that. Again, I was not very sure how the society as an overall is going to take, because I was getting to see very homophobic environment out there, where you were being called on for your behaviors, or, you know, for your mannerisms, and for what you spoke and all of that. So until then, you know, I knew that people are not going to accept, not going to understand this. And the other aspect of our culture is also the fact that the transgender community was very prominent in India. It is very prominent in India, and they've always been that ways. So a lot of them associated the gay men to be transgender women, or the trans women, because that is what they could see, or that is what they had an idea of. Anybody who's feminine, oh, wants to be probably a trans woman. Mm. So, you know, or even the media, the way it kind of gave away information. We didn't have any gay icons at that point of time, or openly gay person was really not there. And it was not kind of a conversation which was being had at a dinner table. Yes, they would talk about trans people, the trans women especially, because they were there on the streets. They used to come home for weddings, or during weddings, they used to be there. If there were childbirths, they used to come there. So their visibility was very much there. But, you know, as others, as lesbians or as gay and bisexual people, there were nobody there. So anybody, especially men who, you know, who had the behaviors of a woman, they say, all right, this is going to be another trans woman, which is otherwise called the hijra, or a derogatory way is called chakka in India. That's how they call them as. So I was, you know, for me, knowing as gay and homosexual, I think that was the time that I went through. And I knew that it's going to be difficult. But I, as I said, you know, that incident that kind of I had, and I promised myself, I said, I'm going to go through with this no matter what happens.
So before we get into what you're doing professionally right now, which I definitely want to get into that because you're doing some amazing, amazing work with multiple organizations. And then, of course, the company that you work for. I want to ask you, if there is a young person and they're having these feelings and feeling confused, of course they have the internet, but what would you say to that young person? What would you say to your younger self or someone who is feeling kind of at the precipice of like, why is this happening to me? Mm-hmm. That precipice of discovery, what would you say to them?
I would just, first and foremost, I would say, hang in there. There is hope. Accept yourself for who you are, because you are special. And there's going to be tough roads ahead, but, and there's going to be help if you ask for it. I didn't have that help. I had to struggle. But now, again, with internet and with, you know, the whole conversation going around the community up there, so there is awareness. So reach out at any point in time that you feel that you're not able to hold on to it for any longer. Because, I mean, that is, for me, very important and personal to talk about these issues so that more people know that there is opportunities or, you know, options to get help. So please ask for help. Give us some sort of, you know, notification or hint that you need help and we can come and reach out. Because now we have a lot of organizations across India, which are, you know, your community-based organizations or the NGOs that are there, which are very much working for grassroots level LGBTQ issues. They will come and help us out. But just hang in there and reach out.
Excellent. Thank you so much. That's awesome. I have had my own challenges with thoughts of suicide and self-harm over many, many years, especially my teenage years and some college years. So I definitely hear what you're saying and you know, I feel you on that, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So
yeah, no, I get that. I mean, I think even though we are virtual, I think the emotions are really getting emoted out here. And I'm getting to feel that. Yeah.
So I want to talk now about your organization that you created, Working with Pride. Mm-hmm. Where did that, what did that spring from? And what kind of work are you all doing in the community?
All right. So Working with Pride, initially was, I think the start of it was at the dinner table among a couple of gay people who are working in corporates. And there was this one ally who was up there and trying to see how can we make our workplaces more LGBTQ friendly. And this was more so with a white guy. I mean, he's more Indian now than American, but at that point of time, he was from America. He was in India working on a project where he was here with his husband, and he came to dinner, with his colleague and another two friends who are from the community but who are Indian. That's where this whole conversation seeded. How do we get our workplaces more inclusive? And this started off in another city, Bangalore. And, you know, we said, whoa, I think we need to really drive this conversation further. And, when we came to Bangalore, the conversation started and we said, you know what, initially it was called Connecting Dots. And then we said, you know what, let's give it another name. And that's where Working with Pride really came in, because we need to be proud of who we are. And we are in an organization, or we are working in corporates. So I think Working with Pride kind of really came unanimous, and we said that's what it is. And so we are a group of working professionals who are out and who have started off LGBT ERGs in their workplace. We also have allies. We have D&I professionals who are, you know, trying to go beyond the gender conversation. Because anywhere and everywhere you see, I think gender is one that they have really started the conversation with. But they fail to go beyond that. Or maybe one more step would be, you know, start off an ERG for people with disabilities. So they had women, people with disabilities. But LGBT was something which was very new, and they really didn't know how to go about with it. Because a lot of them still think that, you know, there are no gay people. You know, they still assume that, oh, gay people, no, they're all there, you know, not in corporates. They may be outside. They may be probably the stereotype, you know, they stereotyped us to be either in fashion industry, in modeling, in, you know, arts and crafts or cultural activities like, you know, maybe dance and all of that. We are not software professionals or in the IT sector. So with that stereotype, we said, all right, let's go ahead and break that mold and tell them we're very much there. We are, you know, 15% of the population. And, you know, out of every 100, 15 of them are there. So, you know, look at it in your organization. If you have 10,000, then you do the math. Mm. Right. So we took that kind of conversation forward. We started building this network of people from various organizations in India. And really built this up. So that's how I think, you know, we still don't call it an organization. We call it a team of people who want to see inclusion of LGBTQ people in the workplace. Mm-hmm. Now, I think we are growing in the fact that it's not only LGBTQ people. I think there's a lot of intersectionality happening, and we need to look at how can we work, you know, how can we collaborate and work together with other entities like women, people with disabilities? How can we bring in mental health issues? And how can we bring the Indian context of issues, which could be casteism and then regionalism, all of those conversations? Because I can always say that if you are a woman, you've already taken two steps behind a man because of the issues that you have as a patriarchy society. Mm-hmm. And then imagine if you are a lesbian, you have to go two steps behind. Then if you are with a disability, if you are with a mental health issue, if you are with, you know, a minority religion, if you are coming from a socioeconomic status, which is not the same. So you see the kind of hurdles that one person has to go through just to be equivalent to a man who has a lot of privileges. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so then we kind of came into this thought that, yes, there is a lot of intersectionality. Now, how do we bring them in? How can we be inclusive of all? I think most of the times LGBTQ people are the ones who want to be inclusive of everybody else.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, so we want to go bring in people, come in. If you are feeling secluded, if you are feeling excluded, you know, come to us. We will take in you. I mean, we will get you in, and then we will fight your battle as well. You know, I think with that intent, we are talking about intersectionality in a lot of aspects, and that is growing, and we are learning, you know, basic things about. Even when we, you know, send a message or when we send a photograph in a message, we try to see how many of them are going to read it. And if there is a person with disability, then a picture cannot be read. So can we write a description for that picture, right? And can we make it gender neutral? Can we make sure that it is not offensive of anything? If there is any offensive language, can we take it off and, you know, mention that? Trigger warning, you know, there is some information which can trigger y'all. Don't get triggered. It is an FYI information for y'all, and then let's accept it and go forward. So we have to think, and it makes us evolve as a person in every possible aspect. And everybody has different issues. Can we be accommodating of them? Mm. You know, so instead of putting up information in a group, then can we have one-on-one conversations? And we are like, wow, this is just, we are scraping the, you know, just the top part, and there is so much more to it. So how do we learn? How do we go about with it? Every day, everybody's learning, and then work this into the corporate space. It is a lot of issues, you know, because people are talking about business, you know, like day-to-day business. We have to do our work. We have to think of profit. We have to think about how do we grow our business. But then when we bring in this diversity and inclusion perspective, then it kind of becomes very uncomfortable for a lot of them, right? So then we kind of tell them, if this topic or this conversation is going to make you uncomfortable, then I think we are in the right direction. Because if it does not make you uncomfortable, then I think, you are way up in your privileges and way up not thinking about what's happening among your people or among your employees. Now, if this is making you uncomfortable, let's go with it. All right, we are in the right direction. Let's move forward. Let's take baby steps. Let's not run. Let's take baby steps, one step at a time, and move and, you know, do the right conversations. So I think that's how it is still evolving. And again, with India being so diverse, we have to look at it from various aspects and, you know, bring that in. So it's a great journey that we're going through.
Do you have any resources specifically for people in the corporate community who are either queer themselves or allies, or maybe they're just saying, you know, we probably do need to address this, but I don't necessarily know where to start? Does Working with Pride have resources for that? Can they get in touch with you?
So what we do is we are trying to create content, but at the same time, we know that there is so much existing content already there. So we kind of put them together and we say, you know what, this is the kind of resources that we have and use it. You know, I mean, in the sense that we don't kind of put everything together. We pick those contents and we keep it in our kitty. And as and when they want it, please use it, because, you know, we can give a high level framework, but I think you need to take that framework and make it, you know, into your usability as per your, you know, organization's culture or standards or the process. So, you know, we do have some sort of framework, but detailed information, if you want to change it, then we can work on it on a case-on-case basis.
Gotcha. So before I wind down here, is there anything that you really wanted to say that you didn't get a chance to address?
I think all I have to say is that India is huge. It's diverse. It is not easy, but at the same time, it's not that difficult. I think we are a very peace-loving nation, but again, with the kind of dynamics that is kind of going, it is becoming difficult, but there is hope. We have survived through so much, and we know that we will survive this. And LGBTQ people out there, I know you'll always feel that, you know, India is a horrible place, or it is not going to get any better. But trust me, it is going to get better, because of the simple fact is there's a lot of awareness, a lot of education happening. The millennials, the youngsters are the future, who are, you know, really changing the whole. They are challenging the norms and they are discussing that openly. So I know there is future. And just hang in there is what I would say. And to all the people who say that homosexuality is a choice, I just have this one question to them. If homosexuality is a choice, so when did y'all choose to be straight?
Yes, absolutely.
And I would just leave it at that for all the people who ask that question. Yeah.
I'll just leave it at that. Yes. Yes, 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 yes. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. And for anyone that wants to get in touch with Suresh and hear more about the organizations that he's involved in and creep him on Instagram, because his Instagram is awesome and I love it. And of course, all of these are going to be linked up in the show notes for this episode. I wanted to give you Suresh's social media here as we close out, at Suresh Ramdas on Twitter. And then on Instagram, it's Suresh_R81. And then, of course, he is on LinkedIn under Suresh Ramdas. So Suresh, as we close out here, I've got three questions for you. And the first is, what is one self-care practice that you practice on a regular basis that you feel helps you keep centered?
Yeah, so on a regular basis, I do yoga and meditation, which I do falter once in a while, but I try to do that as much as possible every day, which keeps me very centered. And, you know, with all the chaos that's happening, this is that one point in time where it just helps me, you know, be myself.
What is one online resource that you would suggest to, let's say, people in the corporate space that are just starting to have the conversation with their colleagues and with their managers and with their bosses around this topic of diversity and inclusion? What's one resource you can give them that can kind of help them spark that conversation in a good way?
The one resource, oh my God, there, you just can't have one resource for knowing the whole spectrum. I know India as such, you know, does not have a lot of these resources, but we depend on the lot of resources which US has around LGBTQ, you know, understanding of inclusion, I think would be is Out and Equal, HRC, GLAAD. I think these are some of those very well-known, websites where you can get those information and which are also corporate specific and also general specific where we can, you know, take that and really go. Even the ILGA also is also there, which gives us that information. So, yeah, I mean, as I said, there's not just one resource, there's multiple, but, you know, these are the ones that I use and that really helps me a lot.
And actually, one resource that you shared on your Twitter account very recently in the last couple of days was genderbread.org, which I saw this image, I was like, yes, yes, yes. I know so many people in my family that need to see this image because, and I don't really have I don't have the words to describe it. Sometimes I feel like I'm a bad ally to myself because I haven't done enough research or I'm not up on the latest terminology. And so when my family is coming to me from whatever space they're coming from, but they're coming to me trying to learn more about these issues, mm-hmm. I don't even have the language to tell them what's what. And this particular image that I'm looking at, which I will put in the description for this episode, is so mm-hmm. useful in talking about the differences between gender identity and gender expression and anatomical sex and sexual orientation. And they're not the same, people. They are not the same. So mm-hmm. I'm going to post this on my social media as well, because I think it's such an important image for everybody to be seeing,
yes.
so that we can also be communicating with each other and everyone else out there that we come into contact on a regular basis who assume that these are all the same and they're not. I know that they're not, but I also don't really know how to tell you in an effective way that they're not. So anyway, mm-hmm. great resource. Thank you for sharing that.
Very true. No, I mean, for me, I think this has always been my, starting conversation when people want to know about what LGBTQ is all about. I say, hold on, before you go into what LGBTQ is all about, let's take a step back and understand, you know, a little bit about ourselves, about, you know, how we are. Mm-hmm. And I go back with the basic definition. Is there a difference between gender and sex? Explain that and then go to the gender bread and then talk to them about, you know, what our community is all about. Because there is no binaries. There are, you know, there is a lot of, it's a spectrum, and then you go about with it. That is one. And then I think for all the straight people, or I wouldn't say straight, I mean, the allies, I would say allies, if you want to know more information, I just posted that one link as well, which really is very helpful. It also has a ton of information and resources, which is called straightforequality.org. And they also, you know, tell people, hey, what is it that I know it's a very US centric, but it really helps, gives a lot of information to, people who want to be allies, who want to really know. You also have an ally spectrum, and, it kind of really helps you set the stage and set the tone for some self-learning by these folks as well, if they want to really do some self-learning, right? So this is also a great website. And they also go ahead and, showcase or talk about some of the websites like Out and Equal, HRC, GLAAD in that as well.
Thank you so much for sharing all of those resources. I've written them all down, and I will be diving into that right after this. And I will be putting all of these links in the show notes. So here's my one final question for you, especially because you are touching so many different communities and involved in so many different organizations. Mm-hmm. With everything going on in the world right now, what is one wish that you have for the world moving forward, 2020 on?
I think I wish everybody can learn from this global pandemic that's going on with COVID. The fact is that this one pandemic is bringing the entire human race on its knees, irrespective of who you are, where you're from. It doesn't look at you as if you are straight, if you're gay, if you're black, if you're white, if you are rich, you're poor, nothing. It affects everyone. End of day, we need to realize we're just one race, which is the human race. And I think we all need to start believing that, we are together. We are not different. Yes, we are different, but I think we need to, celebrate the difference, because we are human beings. We are one race. And we need to kind of accept everybody for who they are. Because right now, I think the kind of work, and I don't know if people are realizing this, but this pandemic has kind of told us that we need to stick together to survive. Yes. We need to, be there for each other, no matter what, I think now nobody's thinking of all the issues, which is happening. Yes, there are people who are thinking about it and making a big issue out of it, but, on a very human level, we want that support from each other. Can we, help each other to go ahead and survive for tomorrow? For me personally, I wish 2020 is like we can respect everybody, and not only humans, but also animals and the people living in this planet Earth. Because if we mess that up, I think Mother Nature has her ways to go ahead and teach us or give us a nice tight wrap across our face to tell us that, you need to coexist.
Yes.
If you don't like to coexist, then I'm going to teach you how to coexist, and it's not going to be nice. So I think that's one way of nature telling us that, don't, as RuPaul says, don't fuck it up.
I love it. I love it. I hope you've enjoyed this conversation. To learn more about Suresh and to have access to all of the resources mentioned in today's episode, hop on over to our website, queerandwoo.com, or find us on social media. Also, if you could do us a big favor and leave a rating and review, that would be awesome. It goes a long way towards making this content more visible to those that are seeking out positive and affirming spaces for queer people in the world of podcasting. I appreciate you, take care of yourself and each other, and I'll catch you next time on Queer and Woo.